What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 225 of the Master Breakdown Podcast. We are coming to you on a wonderful Thursday evening, hot on the heels of the Season 15 Weapon Sandbox Bungie Weekly Update, or I guess I should say the TWAB now. And man, oh man, was this a long one. We thought the last 2 weeks were good. We thought we'd been spoiled. And then here comes week three, and it's just even better than anything we could have imagined. So much information. And on top of that, we have a very special occasion here on the Master Breakdown Podcast. We've always told you guys that it would take a lot for us to bring a guest on, and by God, it has finally happened. Welcoming to the show, we have the weapon features lead from Bungie, Chris Proctor. Thank you so much for joining us, Chris.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks, Mercules.
And I cannot tell you how happy it makes me to have you here. I cannot tell you how happy it makes our community. I know the Discord was legitimately beside itself when we told them that you were going to be a guest on here. And we're gonna basically talk about everything we would normally talk about during a weapon sandbox update, but we're going to have some additional insight coming in from Chris. So that's going to be fantastic. We got a little QA at the end. So we're going to hop right into that stuff. We are going to save the housekeeping for the end, but first we got to get the introduction out of the way. As always, I'm Mercules. Chris is our special guest, but we would be remiss if we forgot. Kit Ketcha, how are you doing tonight, Kit?
Wow. I almost felt like you were going to forget me there. That was, I couldn't blame you. I mean, you know, we've got Chris here, so this is super, super exciting. I have legitimately been excited about this all day. I mean, realistically, like, for weeks, but especially today, I was like, okay, it's happening. He hasn't realized that this is a huge mistake and backed out. And now it's too late. Yeah, I'm super happy to have you here, Chris. Cannot wait to pick your brain on some things, to hear the insights you have to share with us. And yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be real good.
Yeah, actually, I listen to this show all the time. Probably for the last, I don't know, 2.5 or 3 years or something, and I've been a patron for a while too. I think this is like a super valuable podcast for the Destiny community. So happy to be here.
That isn't a glowing recommendation. Unfortunately, the only people who hear it will be the people who already listen to the podcast, but maybe we'll put that on like an advertisement, like a poster, like a critic review.
I was going to say, can you clip that? Because I can put that on the website.
It'd be nice to have something clipped that's positive, as opposed to what the Twitter community loves to clip. You'll find it much more difficult to clip stuff from this because it's just audio. No Twitch clips. Well, like I said, normally we would do housekeeping now, but we know that you guys are not tuning in tonight to hear housekeeping. You're tuning in tonight to hear TWAB and weapon updates. So again, save the housekeeping for the end. If nobody else has anything they'd like to add in the intro, I think it'd be a great idea to just hop right into this week's TWAB.
Let's get down to business.
Let's do it.
Cool. So first things first, you start off with something very generous. You actually defined a couple of terms for us. We had the same issue with the aim assist type of stuff, right? Where we were using bullet magnetism, you guys were using auto aim, you guys were using aim assist, we were using reticle friction. It was a whole thing. We kind of tried to standardize those terms after you were on the Fire and Range podcast. But there's a bunch of other stuff out there that the community has kind of defined for themselves, and you guys have also defined internally. So you actually very generously gave us some definitions tonight. If you don't mind, I'm just gonna read those out. I don't know that there's a ton that we need to talk about necessarily, unless you have anything to add, but you said fall off. Internally, you guys use fall off min and fall off max to mean the start and the end. But moving forward, you're going to use some different ones externally. It's going to be damage fall off start. And you said this also applies to aim assist, right? So aim assist fall off start, damage fall off start. It's the distance at which damage fall off begins, or at which point the gun no longer does maximum damage, right? So if a gun is doing 50 damage per bullet at 1 meter, and the damage fall off start is at 20 meters. At 20 meters, it will no longer do 50 damage per bullet. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay. And then damage fall off end is the distance at which damage fall off ends or hits the damage floor, meaning the gun can no longer do any less damage. So say it was doing 50 damage initially. Now it's doing 25. Outside of this distance, it will just continue to do 25. It has bottomed out in terms of how much damage it can do.
Yep. And that number is zero for certain weapons, if I remember correctly.
All right, so it is possible that a gun at a certain distance does no damage, Even if it were to get a hit. I think we've noticed that in stuff like shotguns and stuff before, right? At a certain point in time, the pellets just cease to exist. In Destiny 1, Lord of Wolves had like a 15-meter hard cap. Acrius is actually a really great example, I think, in Destiny 2, where after a certain point in time, the shots just cease to exist. All right. The next one, we actually had a question about this too from the QA, so we're going to jump that up here. But you said projectiles. You use various terms to describe these externally, including borrowing terms from other genres. Oops. But you have settled on these. Hit scan, which is a projectile that instantly hits. You said this applies to most weapons in the game, for example, auto rifles, hand cans, fusion rifles, and fully drawn bows, in parentheses, at most distances. So
that feels like it needs some clarification.
Yeah. The question we had was something along those lines of, like, when we have been calling guns hit scan, but then at a certain point they cease to be hit scan, what's going on with that?
Yeah, so actually in the weapon data, we don't set a hit scan flag. There is one, but we don't use it. We instead set the projectile speed to a very high value, say 9999, and then the engine converts it into a hitscan projectile if it calculates that it will hit its maximum distance in a single frame. This is a performance optimization, and there really aren't any projectiles that are very fast but not hitscan. So I feel like mostly what people are seeing is the traces, which sometimes do have travel time to them, but the projectile itself should almost always... Actually, it should always just hit instantly. The case of fully drawn bows is an interesting one, though. So I believe those ones, outside of a certain distance, can have a little bit of travel time.
So the speed on a fully drawn bow, then, is not that 9999. It's some smaller value that's still quite fast, but slow enough that at a long range, it will actually take two frames to hit, say.
Yeah, I actually chatted to the designer who made bows, Greg Pang, just to clarify this point. And yeah, his understanding was that in most situations, it'll effectively be hit scan, like it will hit on the frame that you fire. But if you're far enough away, it can take a frame or two.
Okay.
That's very interesting. There's been a lot of theories going around that something like that may have been the case. And it's interesting to finally get confirmation on that, because we had people standing, I forget what it was, they're standing on top of the tower on Nessus spawn, and shooting enemies that were like almost in another spawn zone, and like counting the frames before the damage registered and stuff, and like finding variability and like trying to eliminate the netcode thing and like the latency and all this other stuff. And it was a ton of hypothesis and a ton of work all to get to this conclusion, which it turned out actually was correct. Their hypothesis was correct. So I think that's really neat. Some experimentation, some science on the community side turns out to be right.
And so non-hit scan, projectile with travel time, sometimes having physics bounces, often having explosive damage and or homing. So, for example, rocket launchers, grenade launchers, partially drawn bows, Jotun or Jotun for some of our listeners.
We say Jotun internally.
Okay. That's the official term now. write that down, Mercules.
That's unfortunate for me. If you've listened to the show long enough, you know that I'm quite shit at pronouncing pretty much anything that I've never heard anyone say before. And so it was Jotun for a little bit. It was Shurikens, which one of our patrons actually pledged on the guarantee that I would stop saying that and I would start pronouncing them correctly. So yeah, I'm not great. I'm a very phonetic sounding speaker.
So I think just since we're here, part of the question that we're going to just kind of jump to right now is some weapons that people think might not actually be hit scan, such as linear fusion rifles and sidearms specifically. Are those weapons in fact firing projectiles that are slower and more likely to end up showing up as non-hit scan?
No, those are both definitely hit scan. In fact, sidearms basically use exact same projectiles as hand cannons.
Okay. So it is like you said before, the tracers that people are seeing that may be throwing off their attempts to determine what's going on there.
Yeah, that's what I think is happening. You could also have some cases where the game is taking a little while to report the damage or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like the projectiles for sure should be hitting on the same frame that you fire them.
Well, we're very familiar with damage display glitches.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez, man. That can be an entire podcast on its own. But you also clarified shotguns for us. You said spread angle is the cone that pellets come out in, not to be confused with other types of cones. We know there are many cones in the game, but this determines the size of the outer ring below. So if I'm to clarify that, the spread angle only affects the outer ring. The center and inner rings, obviously the center ring is just one single point, but the inner ring is always a standard size.
It's a proportion of the outer ring.
Okay.
I don't have the data up, but it's something like the outer. If the outer ring is 1, the inner ring ends at 0.6, and the center is at 0, something like that.
All right. So the shotgun shot contains 12 pellets. That we know. The center one is the one pellet right in the middle. Then there are 4 wedges that make up the inner ring, and there's 1 pellet per wedge. And there are 7 wedges that make up the outer ring. There's 1 pellet in each of those. And so the center, which is fixed, and then each pellet is randomized inside of that wedge, the angle and the inner and outer radius. So it's not quite a pure RNG pellet spread, but there is more randomness to it than a pure 100% fixed spread.
Yep. See, I don't know if either of you have played games that have 100% random shotgun pellet spread, and like you can end up with all of the pellets clustered off in one corner or something like that. So that can't happen in Destiny, but it's still fairly random.
Yeah, well, that would be extremely frustrating, but I think we've shot pellets at walls long enough to know that there's not a 100% random pellet spread. We kind of had determined the 3 rings thing on our own, but it's great to hear that that's the case. It's also great to hear that you said, you know, it may be worth looking at some point in time about, you know, potentially a more standardized RNG pellet distribution, or a less RNG pellet distribution.
Yeah, sort of a wish list thing for me.
A lot of wish list, I think, if you had to poll the community.
Yeah, it would definitely be nice to know where that shot's going to go when you fire it. But shotguns remain popular nonetheless. So,
isn't it crazy?
People cannot put them down.
gets the hardest nerf ever, and yet still somehow sits near the top or at the top of weapon usage, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, shotgun usage dropped 5%. Like, it was at like 60 or something and dropped to 55. I was just comparing the before and afters. I was really expecting a bigger drop. But at least it's different shotguns now.
Is that for just special weapons?
Just for special weapons. Yeah.
I mean, this is entirely unrelated. And this is going to happen. We do tangents on this podcast. You've listened to it long enough, you know that this happens. But since we brought that up, let's... In our research, where we've done a couple breakdowns of the meta and stuff like that, to us, it looked like kind of the big winners of that patch that you guys did ended up being like SMGs. We thought usage increased on those a fair amount. Pulse rifles, fusion rifles, and 140 RPM hand cannons, which their usage just skyrocketed while 120s plummeted. Like, they basically supplanted them one for one. Does that sound about right? I mean, are we tracking along the same lines there?
Yeah, I think so. And like, I think you've discussed some of this stuff as well, but for example, scout rifle usage dropped off a little bit, which I think is because you don't need to be able to challenge 120s out to quite as far a range, for example.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah, we were expecting, I think we were expecting Dead Man's Tale to still be really, really strong even after that nerf. And I honestly still think it is strong, but it just doesn't seem like it's quite caught on. The usage has fallen precipitously on that. You know, it's still a very popular for a scout rifle, but it's nowhere near the menace that I was kind of expecting it to be. Similarly, I think a lot of people thought grenade launchers were going to just moon through the roof, and they've seen a bit of an uptick, but, you know, across the whole of the spectrum, the usage numbers didn't double or didn't increase by 50% or anything like that, which I think surprised probably a lot of people, but they still got touched. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Touch, do you want to cover some of those other global changes, specifically the stasis ones?
Yeah. So, this is sort of what I expected that y'all had planned, but so legendary stasis weapons, excited to see those come in. And so you clarify here, stasis power weapons are in the power slot. All other stasis weapons are in the kinetic slot. And this is to avoid overcrowding the energy slot and make it reasonable to use when in match game content. Very much appreciate that because that energy slot is already a little overcrowded. Stasis weapons don't do intrinsically anything different or unique from weapons of other damage types, except they are the only weapons that can roll with stasis perks, which you say you generally intend any stasis perks with slowing or freezing effects to have a kill trigger, being obviously easy enough to use in PvE and probably not excessively obnoxious in PvP, we hope.
Yep.
So I'm curious to know, looking, and this is a forward-looking question, so if you can't answer it, you can't answer it. Can we expect to see Any additional damage types go into kinetic? Do you guys have any plans on the slot organization that you can share, or is that all need to know and I don't need to know?
I mean, all of that stuff is pretty far future. So
okay.
I probably shouldn't comment on it, but I will say that when we started looking at how the numbers would break down, if we had four damage types in the energy slot and only one in the kinetic slot, like it clearly wasn't going to work.
Right.
So like we need to do something. And I think the same would be true if we were going to have like four in the energy slot and, you know, two in the kinetic slot, right? Like it's still too many in the energy slot. So we would need to do something different one way or another.
Okay.
We've kind of noticed that even when we look at the weapon breakdowns of like what we're using, like you'll notice a very heavy distribution of certain types of weapons in the energy slot. And I think people have started, well, it also doesn't help that like fusion rifles, right? Like if you want to use a fusion rifle, that's a kinetic, your options are Bastion and that's it. Right. So yep. For me, a heavy fusion player.
I don't know. Somebody with Arbalest was kicking my butt the other day.
Yeah. Arbalest is a thing. I don't know that I necessarily think it plays the same as my Glacioclasm. I'd like to think that I can get a kill from that distance with it. But you know, I am what the anime profile pictures call a dad, despite not having any kids. And you know, I use pulse rifle fusion, and that kind of limits what I'm allowed to do, right? Like if I want to use that, I can't use an energy pulse rifle. I have to use my fusion in that slot. So it'll be interesting to see what Stasis brings. I know you obviously can't talk about a ton of it. You guys are saving that for the reveal and everything like that upcoming. Very excited. Stasis perks.
Yeah.
Yep.
You mentioned that if they have a slower freeze effect, they want to trigger on a kill. Was cryosthesia kind of like the trial period for that? Of like, it came out and people were like, what the heck? They're putting more stasis in PvP. And then it kind of turned out, it was like, oh, it's actually not really that much of a problem. Like good players can use it really, really well, but requiring a kill, like not everyone is getting multiple kills in a life. So it kind of limits immediately the effectiveness.
Yeah, cryosthesia was just kind of a victim of unfortunate timing. Like, we planned that before Stasis launched and didn't expect, like, the level of salt about Stasis in the Crucible. But once that happened, it was clear that we couldn't launch a really, really strong Stasis weapon right after that. I think it's probably safe, actually, to come back and touch it now and bring it back into line because, like, I think it was better to ship it weak. But we don't want it, like, an exotic that no one uses.
It's the same thing with Vex Mythoclast, right? Like, you know, what you guys touch on here, and we'll get to it. You guys shipped it a little bit under because obviously there's a fear of you shipping something incredibly broken and strong that then just dominates the Crucible. But at the same time, it is an exotic, right? It should have some, you know, something special about it that makes you want to use it. But the next change is probably going to generate a lot of salt. Definitely generate a lot of salt when you guys were talking about it on the Firing Range podcast.
I laughed out loud when I read this one.
Yeah, so they've addressed quick draw's permanent 100% handling buff. They now see more people using the quick saw glitch. I myself use it because I run the Monarch and Messenger and it's super effective. So I can't, you know, everyone's like, oh, you don't even use it, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, but I actually do. And it's a huge part of my gameplay. I was trying to play without it the other day and I was like, oh man, but whatever. This glitch uses combinations of inputs to animation cancel and allows near instant weapon swaps. We want the handling stat to continue to have value on weapons, and we don't want, for example, aggressive shotguns to lose their key downside, which is slow swaps, due to an unintentional side effect of the animation system. So you fixed the quick swap glitch. Man, how did the internal thought process go when you guys were weighing the pros and the cons of removing this from the game?
So, I mean, the key one is the handling stat, right? Like, anything that lets you completely ignore a sixth of a weapon's stats just feels like a bad play on our part. I think that if we were to deliberately introduce something which was, you know, required some more input skill or something like that, and we could make it a core part of the game, that would be different. But like, this is something not everyone knows about, and once you know about it, it's not that hard to do. I don't know. We immediately saw people using it more once the quick draw nerf happened, and felt like we had to act on it reasonably quickly. Like, I think when we were talking on Firing Range, or it might have been one of the summits, we were discussing it as a possibility, and like almost straight after that we decided, no, we're going to fix up the animation priority stuff.
And we've spoken before too about what allowing the quick swap glitch to continue does to PvE, like in game too, because like you've got double slugs being a leading DPS candidate right now, and it's because of the quick swap glitch, or mostly because of it, not entirely because of it, but mostly because of it. And you can say like, well, leave that in the game all you want, but if that's the only in-game strategy for DPS, then the next boss that comes out has to be designed around that strategy, and then it becomes everybody has to do it. And then it's like, well, now you're requiring a glitch to play in-game content effectively, and that's no fun for anyone. And I know people got real hung up on the like accessibility they misconstrued a quote, and they're like, oh, blah, 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 blah. But it's not more so that not everyone can do it, because like you said, it's pretty easy to do. It's the fact that it's not an intended mechanic that is stated for you in the game, and it negates an entire stat, and it forces you to potentially design bosses around it. Like, that's a lot of blowback for a glitch that allows you to swap weapons quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the undiscoverability of it. And anytime we have a player tactic which is just dramatically more powerful than everything else, the game has to start to be tuned around that. And then everyone has to use that as a baseline, right? Like, it's like Well of Radiance back in Reckoning. Like, Reckoning had to be built with that in mind, which is a shame, right? Like, it locks a lot of people out of that top-tier content, which we don't want.
Well, so I look forward to seeing some bosses that that are much easier to kill now. So the next change up, I feel like is a super dramatic change, and probably one that maybe is throwing a bone to kind of the same group of people who might be unhappy about the quick swap glitch. Which is to say, hardcore in-game PvE players, primary ammo, infinite.
Yeah.
I'm curious what the thought process was to get you there.
Primary ammo just has never been interesting, right? Like, very, very occasionally you'd completely run out, like you just are dominating in PvP, like someone goes on a 40 streak and runs out of sidearm ammo or whatever, or you're doing something super, super hard, and you run out and you can't easily go pick some up. Like, it's random when it happens, and it doesn't feel like you can reasonably mitigate for it. And making it infinite, like, there are a bunch of things that we had to do across the game, which are listed out here as well. But ultimately, we feel like it puts the game in a much better place for the future.
I like to make some weapons that were kind of considered like niche builds. I know the Discord was like checking them off, but they're like Devil's Ruin, Huckleberry, like obviously Sweet Business, which you guys mentioned, but like a lot of stuff that has these perks that makes it like burn through ammo really quick was kind of limited in some in-game content, because like you just, like you said, if you're behind cover and you're shooting in a Grandmaster Nightfall, you can't just go run out and pick up primary ammo. Like, that's a death sentence.
Yep.
So this has made a lot more things. And honestly, when I read Reddit, and Reddit can be a salty place, right? But I come from Reddit, right? I was born in the Reddit. I grew up in the Reddit. But Reddit was head over heels happy about infinite primary ammo. Like, a lot of people feel like you freed them up to build craft in a way that they really couldn't before for the activities that you like. So I'm really, really a fan. I know it was no easy thing to do on your side. Fighting Lion, of course, you know, we're going to talk about a little bit later, but there's some real big changes you have to make. But I really, really like that change. I like the infinite primary ammo.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, so just kind of checking off a few of the changes you guys had to make to accommodate this. Inertia Override, we talked about before in the abilities episode. So just, you know, listen two episodes ago if you want to hear about that, or read the TWAB.
It'd be a very... very strong perk.
Yeah.
You know, ammo scarcity may be one thing, but the strength that perk gives of the super long damage bonus and also refunding melee ammo now, like, that's going to be a very strong perk.
I think so. Drop mags, downside of reducing reserve ammo was always kind of meaningless, to be honest with you. So now it is plus reload speed minus magazine size, which will make it more of a choice, I have to say. Certain.
Like the opposite of extended mag.
Yeah.
Which is pretty nice. It's like poetry. It rhymes.
Yeah. The other thing about drop mag, I can't remember when we announced this, but it's not rolling on any weapons anyway. I think at some point we might just rework it and put it back in the pool. But like, I don't think it's a particularly desirable perk in this form, but we had to make some sort of change so people who already had the perk on a gun just have this thing that no one else could get, you know?
You know, if we had luck in the chamber and final round like we did in D1, this would be a very sought-after perk for those low magazine size 120 hand cannons.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I will say where I have drop mag, it is primarily on hand cannons. Yeah. And so that will definitely hurt a little bit. But compact arrow shafts, upside of increasing reserve ammo. Likewise, now it's plus reload, plus handling. You have some other perks that just kind of refer to reserves. And then fighting lion and sweet business, we'll have to get to those when we get to the exotics. I'm very excited to find out what these new trials perks are, find out if there is a reason for me to dive back into trials. It has been several months. I cannot lie about that. It has just not been motivating for me. So
we know that's not, your cup of tea at Bungie. But we are all very excited for the news of the trials rework and everything like that. So, yep. The trials weapons that are coming back in season 15, they have 7 perks in each column. It was previously 5. Are there going to be new perks in that pool? Can you tell us that much, or is it going to be just the good perks that we already have in existence in the game?
So it's going to be a bit of both. Like, there are obviously a bunch of new perks coming in season 15, and some of those will go in the trials weapons, but also some perks from season 14 that couldn't go in the older trials weapons. Like, man, I really want, you know, a good hand cannon with tunnel vision on it, or, you know, that kind of thing.
That's going to be fantastic.
I do want that now.
Yeah. We all do. You guys have been killing it with the new perks that you've been adding.
Yeah.
I don't know if there was a philosophy change or something, but I know that there was some concern about how do you make players regrind the weapons they already have if you don't have sunsetting, right? But these additional new perks that are coming into a pool where it's like, yeah, you may have a season 14 messenger, but do you have a season 15 messenger? Right? Like, that is motivation right there. And I don't feel bad about that motivation. What I see is like, oh, new perk. I want to go grind that. I want to go. To me, it doesn't feel unfair. So I'm really, really happy that you guys have kind of embraced the, like, let's give them a bunch of really great new perks. Tunnel vision was great. Heating up was great. Like, the list goes on. Killing wind is fantastic. It's really, really tremendous. So I'm super happy to hear that not only are there going to be new perks for these, but there's going to be stasis perks and everything like that. I think you guys have been killing it in that game.
Yeah, well, we're now staffed a little bit better. So like, we have 3 dedicated weapon designers, which is a first, and we're still growing a bit. We do live in constant fear that we're going to run out of perk ideas, and then suddenly players won't have any reason to grind the new weapons, but it hasn't happened yet, and we keep finding more design space, so maybe we're okay.
As long as you don't run out of literally perks you can make on a weapon, and then everything becomes a damage buff. And it's just increasing damage buffs. But
that's the danger.
Yeah. And then you said when max power levels on weapons launch, we reissued several weapons. We saw how frustrated players were at having to regrind their favorite roles because the perk pools hadn't changed. Based on that, our reissued guidelines from season 13 onwards were replace almost all the perks, which was kind of the exact opposite of that. Turns out that was an overcorrection, that certain perks on the original pools had become part of the identity of a weapon. So moving forward, the guidelines for reissues will be to remove the least useful 2 to 3 perks and add 2 to 3 newer perks to give the weapon some new options, but may result in entirely new top tier roles without removing the old one. To me, this sounds like the perfect compromise.
Yeah, I think that where we landed was a pretty healthy place, and we're still going to keep bringing back weapons, right? So it's reassuring that people seem to have really warmed to this process. I don't think that they would have in like Season of Arrivals. Right, like, if we had done this to, say, Gnawing Hunger in Season of Arrivals, I think people still would have been like, ah, man, I want more Outlaw Rampage back. I'm going to have to regrind that.
Yeah.
But I think enough time has passed that it's not this, like, instant swap where my last thing became useless, right?
Well, and also people are thinking, like, I can keep the weapons now forever.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not the fear of, like, wow, you remove something that now I have to regrind for, only for it to be removed again in the future. And like, that was a huge fear a lot of players had. I know I had that. It kind of killed a little bit of my motivation to grind for stuff. And I was like, well, how long do I get to use this for? Like, 3 more months? I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely hurt when my outlaw opening shot Blasphemer was not only sunset, but irreplaceable. So I'm excited to see what you guys have for us. I know that's a pain that a lot of people shared, maybe not specifically the Blasphemer, but other weapons.
These more aggressive pulse rifles. Aggressive pulse rifles are awesome, and I think there's one in the game right now. It is.
Yep, there is one that's not Sunset, and there were only ever three total, right? Yeah.
It was Blast Furnace, Sacred Provenance, and the Tangled Shore one?
Yeah, right? It was Go Figure.
Go Figure, yep.
Cool. Well, you've also made some small adjustments to weapons reissued to move these in the direction. So you've added one or two of the original perks to each column for the Luna weapons, which are the moon weapons. The Lectern weapons only, right? You've added one or two of the original perks to each column, but you have not removed anything. So those weapons just have an increased perk size now, right? But it's because they can be farmed. All right. And then you've also added one of the original perks to one or both columns of the Dreaming City weapons. And since these can't be farmed yet, you don't want to increase the size of the pools by more than one. I think that's okay. I don't know if you listened to our breakdowns of those, but we were not entirely thrilled with those reprised weapons coming back in their current form.
Yep, well aware.
Well, we won't be a dead horse.
Like we said before the podcast, we try not to say anything on the show that we wouldn't say in real life. So
yeah, we get it already. You didn't like those ones. I get it.
So you guys have also made a lot of archetype changes in this upcoming patch. Important note at the outset here, exotics do receive these changes as written unless otherwise mentioned in the exotic section. So for those listening, just remember, if you're wondering, does this apply to an exotic? Probably yes. But keep listening. So breach grenade launchers, people are afraid of them. People hate and fear them just because they fear what they don't understand. So there was a small uptick in usage. We noticed that as well. And the change that you made, I think, is really interesting. So you are aiming to reduce the ease of getting big splash damage for priming or cleaning up targets. And so you've done that by reducing the blast radius by 0.4 meters. For example, max blast radius decreased from 4.55 meters to 4.15 meters. Minimum blast radius decreased from 3.8 to 3.4. Thank you for giving us the min and max blast radius. Yep. Appreciate that. Nice to have the scale. The splash damage was reduced by 20, which reduces total damage for a direct hit from 220 to 200 before taking spike or proximity grenades into account. And you increase damage in PvE by 12% for a small net buff to total damage in PvE. Obviously, this does not affect Wither Horde, which has its own special splash effect. So my one concern here, and I'm wondering if you can comment from internal playtests, is that reducing the blast radius may make these less effective at combating groups of enemies in PvE content. I know it's a fairly small blast radius nerf, so maybe it didn't seem to have a big effect with the extra damage, but can you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of playtests of like PvP and hard PvE content, and we didn't find that it made a big difference overall. Like, the nice thing about PvE is that the enemies don't dodge very hard.
Right.
They're not that hard to hit, so we didn't feel like this was a really big change.
Very cool. A couple of specific numbers questions here. You did say it reduces the splash damage by 20, which reduces the total damage for a direct hit from 220 to 200. Is it possible for a level 10 resilience guardian to survive a direct hit from a grenade launcher yet? Is it do we have a number for 10 resilience?
Yeah, 10 resilience is 70 health, 130 shields, so it would be exactly 200. So a direct hit should still kill. It's possible there'll be some weirdness depending on exactly where it detonates, but I would still expect it to kill.
And you said that's before taking spike or proximity grenades into account.
Yeah.
Does proximity grenades likely to make it not kill because it's going to proc step before it actually hits the person? Or yeah. does... Okay, yeah.
That's proc step will only do the AOE damage.
Okay. Cannot hit a target then. Okay, yeah. That's interesting. I think we've already kind of thought about that. How much is the splash damage by itself? So if you ignore the direct hit number, how much is that splash damage?
So it varies depending on blast radius. At zero blast radius with the season 15 numbers, it would be 100 impact and 100 AOE. And with 100 blast radius, it would be 40 impact, 160 AOE.
Wow. That's interesting. So prior to that, it was at max blast radius, it was a substantial amount of damage in AOE.
Yeah, so previously it would have been 180 damage AOE. So even with Proxdet then, you couldn't kill any resilience outright, but you'd come really damn close.
Right, and basically if you tickle them after that, if they've taken any chip damage from anything, it's pretty much going to kill them, because there's very few things in the game that do less than 20 damage, which I think was one of the big pain points of grenade launchers. I mean, we pointed out, and my bone to pick with people is that, like, I hate when people use something in an argument like, oh, I'm seeing grenade launchers everywhere in PvP. And it's like, well, you're not really. Like, you're just flat out, you're not. The usage numbers don't support that, right? Do I think grenade launchers are super annoying in PvP? I do, right? I've told this story before, but there was a brief period of time when I was at Bungie that we had a playtest where they had, like, cranked grenade launchers through the roof. And, like, the playtest meta was all grenade launchers on every team. And it was, like, the worst thing I've ever experienced in Destiny PvP. And, like, I have no interest in moving into a grenade launcher meta. But that being said, like, be realistic about what you don't like about grenade launchers. Like, I didn't like that people could miss me and still do 180 damage, you know, 3 meters to my left, which I didn't think was entirely fair. So personally, to me, as far as changes go, I think this is the change that grenade launchers needed. You still offer a little bit of that skill shot that you spoke about, and people memed on that because they're dicks, right? But, you know, you still, now it's, you have to be more accurate. You have to be more reliant on a direct hit if you want to get an instant kill. And it's less rewarding for those near misses, which before were pretty much, if you'd been tickled by anything, you were going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. Just on the skill shot thing, like I almost tongue in cheek defined this in my definition section, but it's actually a term from MOBAs, like League of Legends, where a skill shot is just a manually aimed ability with travel time. Which, like, yeah, that's what a grenade launcher is. But anyway, Destiny players don't have that vocab, so I should have used a different term to explain what I actually meant. This is actually also why I've started defining things before I talk about them.
That's a super good idea. I think it helps all of us out. It helps us all to be on the same page. So we've had, Kutch knows, we've had to do that before, right? Like, we've talked about things like skill floor and skill ceiling, and, like, we're using the terms wildly different than some people think in their heads. And then they come in Discord and they're like, what the hell are you talking about? And we're like, oh, well, we're not talking about the same thing. Mm. So now we do the same thing. Like, we define a term before we try to use it, because it just helps everyone to be together. But honestly, grenade launcher change, I got to give two thumbs up to that. I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah.
Nice.
As somebody who uses grenade launchers to prime frequently, this is fair. This is fair.
I can't blame you for it.
I mean,
yeah, they're good fun as long as not too many people are using them. Like, it is that thing where, like, there are, what, like, 6% usage or something like that. And I think if they got to, like, 10, that would just be way too annoying.
That would be pretty
actually
bad.
I kind of don't think it's the fault of grenade launchers necessarily, though. It's just there's too much special ammo floating around, because you can't actually win matches with grenade launchers if you just use your two starting ammo and whatever you pick up, right? And if you're not running double scavs and things.
Well, and now you can't run double scavs anymore.
Now you can't run double scavs.
That should also help.
It should offset it, yeah.
Again, those numbers you gave are for special weapons only. They were 6% of special weapons. Or are they 6% of, like, equipped usage? Like, 6% of guardians have them equipped, or out of special weapons, you know, they make up 6%.
Let me just look it up. Yeah, all crucible. I must have been looking at all weapons before. It's like 8%. They're hovering between, like, 6 and 9% in regular crucible. I'm actually just going to quickly check trials.
I'd be interested to see, because trials caters to a higher skill caliber of player, and I'm interested to see which way that kind of swings, right?
Yeah. Actually, I was already looking at trials. But yeah, so one interesting thing that I've observed is if something is easy to use, like all players of like low to medium skill use it. If something has high potential, high-skilled players use it. So it was really interesting to look at the stats on like shotguns and 120 hand cannons. It was like, obviously they were super dominant, but they were way more dominant in trials, which is a higher-skilled environment. Anyway, so yeah, in regular PvP, just Crucible, they're like 5 to 8%. Varies quite a lot week to week. I think like when Momentum Controller's in town, whatever. Let's see. In regular PvP, they're like pretty steady at 12%. So what that tells me is that they work way better in sixes, and they're not actually really effective weapons in trials. And I think there are certain players, like, you know, Cammy can just dominate with them. But I think for most players, making them effective is pretty hard. It's very easy to be really annoying, though. And that's, like, reason enough to look at them.
Well, and that's also a different thing, and that's a good point. That's a good differentiation to make, right? Like, it's pretty easy to be really frustrating or annoying using a grenade launcher. You might not necessarily be effective, but you're going to really upset the other player. I think, Kutch, we talked about this the other day where it was something like it wasn't a net zero, right? Like, usually you think if one person enjoys something more, the other person enjoys getting killed by it, like, less, right? But there are certain things that when you make a change, like, it's just a flat net negative. Right. And I think grenade launchers are one of those things. Like when you're getting killed with a grenade launcher, the rage you feel at dying to one is disproportionate to the joy the other person may feel from killing you with one.
Yeah. Feels bad when you break line of sight with someone and they can finish you off anyway. Right.
That's actually literally the reason I use them. I don't know if that makes me a bad person, but
yeah, you monster.
That's why I like explosive rounds weapons in PvP, actually, because then when people are absolute and I duck around a corner, I just shoot the ground and laugh maniacally to myself.
Yeah, it's good times.
Anyway, machine gun usage, surprisingly high. That does surprise me that it would be considered high at all. So increased PvE damage by 20%. That seems like a big number.
It's a big number, and it makes them competitive as heavy weapons. It doesn't put them anywhere near the top, though. Like what they lose in like raw damage output, they gain in ease of use because they're kind of effectively infinite range. You can use them from anywhere in an encounter. They have gigantic reserves and all that sort of stuff. So they needed a boost, but they didn't need an enormous one.
All right. Seems fair. Scout rifles, hand cannons have felt weaker in hard PvE content than you'd like. I think we all agree with that. So increased damage just versus minors by 15%. Were they performing better against majors or at level? Or do you just not want them to be effective versus majors and that's more of a special weapon situation?
It's more that it's pretty safe to make stuff that kills miners more easily.
Okay.
So we felt like we give them a reasonably large damage boost without really worrying about, like, distorting weapon balance in PvE. Like, same sort of reason for why it's okay to make a weapon like Trinity Ghoul with the Catalyst, right? Like, the Catalyst was one of the first things I made at Bungie, and, you know, if we were worried about being able to clear out adds really quickly, we wouldn't have shipped that. It's a bit different when you start looking at like orange bars and yellow bars.
Sure.
And we really want you to use your special ammo weapons for those.
Okay.
Perfect sense. Next up is one of the biggest changes, like dramatic changes in this entire thing. It's something we've spoken about before, but fusion rifles, man, two of the archetypes getting complete reworks, charge time, bolts. I mean, it's really, really crazy. You said fusion rifles have benefited indirectly from the mid-season 14 shotgun nerf. That we know. But fusion rifle subfamilies weren't as different from each other as we wanted, and they weren't all useful in a variety of content. So we looked at all the options we have for diversifying them. We ended up with some substantial changes. This isn't intended to be a global buff to fusion rifles, but we expect some of these to be better counters to other weapons than they were previously. I really like here that you showed other options you evaluated. Because people a lot of times when they hear, oh, you're changing fusion rifles, they think, why didn't you do this? It's like the first thing. And a lot of times you guys did think about doing that, and there's a reason you didn't. So you said giving the projectiles travel time, which is something I hear all the time suggested. You did like the idea, but on investigation, you found that there were networking issues with rapid burst of non-hit scan projectiles, and they didn't play as well as we wanted them to. May look at it again in the future. Seems like a lot of work. Burst rate of fire, correct me if I'm wrong, this means the actual time it takes to fire the burst, right? It's like increasing the delay between bolts in the shot. Is that what you mean?
Right.
Okay. So this would have meant touching design data and audio for every fusion rifle we ever shipped. And that's kind of well beyond the scope of what you guys were interested in.
Yeah.
Okay. So you increase the PVE damage, just a flat 15% bonus across everything. Previously, high impact had no bonus and rapid fire had a 12.5% bonus. Now they all have a 15% bonus. And then you're going to push the subfamilies further apart. You're adjusting charge time, shots fired per burst, previously 7 for everything. And damage also, note that base means without battery perks, a charge time masterwork, or an adept charge time mod. So just the flat damage that it does unmodified. So high impacts, which currently I think are probably the most popular by a relatively wide margin, although Plug One is making a run for being one of the most used fusions. You have slowed their charge rate. It was 0.86 seconds. It is now 1 second flat. And you have reduced the shots per burst from 7 to 5, which reduces the total damage per burst. You found that charging these in the open is super risky, but pre-charging around corners is very effective. You also say that you believe that they're less reliant on stability, so you can stack a bit more range. What is the actual damage that they're going to do per bolt, if you don't mind me asking?
So in the TWAB, I was sort of talking about overall damage per burst, and I realized afterwards that's super misleading because people were saying, oh, they've just deleted 2 of the bolts from high impacts, so they're going to do 2 bolts less worth of damage, and that's definitely not the case. So, I mean, you probably know what the old numbers were off the top of your head, but high impacts in Season 15 will do 62 damage per bolts. Precisions do 40, adaptives do 38.6. Rapid fires do 29.4.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I got it. I'm taking notes here. Yeah. Give me those numbers one more time. Sure. You said high impacts do 62.
Yep. Precisions do 40. Adaptives do 38.6. And rapid fires do 29.4. The weird decimals, by the way, is because we have nice round numbers for the burst damage, and then it's divided by the number of bolts.
That's actually interesting. I did not know that that was the way you guys were figuring out damage on this.
Yeah, same with shotguns.
So is it possible for a high impact fusion to kill someone with 3 bolts if they're at 0 resilience?
I made a spreadsheet just to calculate this kind of stuff. Just a second.
I also have a spreadsheet to calculate this kind of stuff.
Well, let's see if they line up, shall we? Okay, and I have my resilience table. Yes.
Oh, yep. Look at that. Look at that. So it does line up, at least for 0 resilience and at least for 10 resilience. Mine lines up, which I'm pretty happy with. That means all the other numbers in between, those don't matter. Right. But the ones that do. Okay, cool. So for the most part, high impacts are going to be a 4 bolt kill. Precisions are going to be a 5 bolt kill. And then adaptives, 38.6 times 5, will be a 5 or 6 bolt kill, depending on resilience. And 29.4 times 6. And then rapid fires will be a 7 bolt kill. Those are the quick numbers that I'm getting jotting down. Interesting. So I know a lot of people were saying to me that it sounded like high impacts got a straight up nerf. Is what they are. And I think that that was a product of the reduced total damage per burst.
Yeah.
I think people weren't understanding the way the damage numbers are going to shake out. So it seems to me like what you've done for high impacts is you have basically just flat out removed two of the bolts, but the other 5 bolts that shoot do a lot more damage now.
Yeah.
And to me, maybe alone here, but having used the Exile's Curse with Kickstart to get those like super high damage numbers, personally, I feel like this might be a buff for me. I'm going to have to play with it, but I feel like this might be a buff for me.
So I have a question about the last bullet point there, about them being less reliant on stability. And I'm going to have a very similar question when we get to rapid fires in a second here. But I am wondering if the total bolt spread has then changed. So because there are now only 5 bolts, is the spread actually just like, you know, those 2 bolts are gone. So it's going to require slightly, perhaps less control to keep the bolts close, or is the distance that the burst, like the spread distance that the burst covers, is that the same? And the 5 bolts are now going to be more spread out, and it's going to take the same level of pressure essentially to keep the bolts on target.
So all of this kind of stuff, like recoil, accuracy, cone changes, aim assist decreases, like all of that stuff is per bolt on fusion rifles. So firing fewer bolts mean you'll have less recoil per burst.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
That's huge. Dude, folks, this is a buff.
I've got to think that it is. I've honestly got to think that it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it may not be, right? Because now you obviously have 2 less bolts to hit, which means if you were inaccurate on that first shot, you don't get to like drag the reticle over and finish them off with the second half of the burst, right? I feel like because the charge time has increased and the amount of bolts has decreased, I feel like this is going to make them harder to use.
Yeah.
But potentially at a higher level, more useful. Yeah. Now, that being said, for the people who don't want to change the way fusion rifles work, you've got precisions and adaptives, which are basically close to unchanged. Same base charge times, same 7 bolts per burst, right? You very slightly increase the total damage per burst. Plug one is already pretty popular, especially with that cornered roll that TV's been talking about. I mean, to me, it seems like if you try out the high impacts and you're like, you know, I don't really like the changes, you've got a beautiful fallback, which is the precisions functioning just the way they function right now, but a little bit better. I mean, to me, this is sounding like a win-win scenario as someone who loves fusion rifles.
Yeah, I kind of see the high impacts as being the thinking Vooper's fusion rifle. Like you really don't want to be out in the open. But if you know someone's going to come around a corner or something and you line up that shot, you can map them. Like you can really do a lot of damage at quite long ranges. And then I do feel like they've ended up playing fairly differently from each other in a way that they didn't before.
I think so too. I always would have thought that just changing the charge times probably would have been enough to differentiate them, right? But you've gone a step further than that. You've not only changed the charge times, you've changed functionally the entire way that the burst work, which to me is a much more interesting change. And Rapid Fire's potentially got the craziest change of all. Their charge time has decreased pretty massively. It's now under a half second.
Yep.
0.46 was 0.54. The bolts per burst has increased from 7 to 9. Which increases the total damage per burst. Now, obviously, the damage per bolt is slightly less. It's now 29.4, right? So it's going to require 7 of those bolts to get a kill on pretty much any resilience, I think. In playtesting, you said you found them to be very effective against shotgun rushers. You know, they need to be closer because of the shotgun nerfs. You have a shorter charge time. Now, that being said, there is a time that it takes for the burst to leave the fusion rifle, which has to be taken into account as well.
Yep.
You said they are now more reliant on stability, but with the increased damage, they're less reliant on range, which is interesting. You answered that question for us above. To me, what this almost sounds like is like a charge Lord of Wolves, but with a little bit of a charge time, right? Yeah. Like that's what it sounds like. That when I think of Lord of Wolves, it shoots, you know, 10 shots, boom, 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 boom. And that's to me what Rapid Fire Fusion sound like right now. And for a time period, Lord of Wolves was very scary in the Crucible.
Yeah, I think I might have. No, this is right. I'm sorry, I'm just looking at the charge time table. And yeah, like with accelerated coils, rapid fires are 0.42 seconds, which is ridiculous, right? Like that's super, super fast.
That's very nearly instant, right, guys? Yeah. That's a half second. You know, you have perks that activate slower than that with their delays, much to our chagrin.
So, and just to clarify for our listeners, so with the increased shots per burst, the total recoil of the bursts on the rapid fires will be essentially 2 bolts higher. So it will require perhaps a little more thumb pressure to rein them in on the sticks. I feel like that gives them a much better chance to actually do what they perhaps were intended to do from the beginning, which is offer a counter to shotgun play. So I'm intrigued. I'm very intrigued by all of my options. It's still going to be really hard for me to put, I've been loving the precisions recently for fusion rifles, and it's going to be hard for me to put those down. But I'm going to have to do some experimenting. This is possibly one of the most interesting sandbox changes I think that I have ever seen you guys put out. So that's probably a compliment, I think.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So
I do think players are going to solve it eventually, right? Like eventually people will solve a meta and they'll figure out what the best things are and they'll just use that. But I think there's enough variables here that it'll probably take a while and people will be able to use their favorites.
That's good. That's always what we look for, is how long it kind of takes the meta to solidify and shake out after a balance patch, right? And if it takes a couple months, like that's golden, right? That's more time for everyone to use what they want and less what they are dictated to by the meta. But part of this required adjusting several fusion rifle perks and one mod. You said backup plan's implementation was incompatible with the fusion rifle changes. We felt they could use a rework anyway. 100% agree on that. You said you removed the plus 100 to charge time stat, and you instead adjusted the charge time multiplier from 0.85 to 0.7 and now scales damage by 0.8. I feel like I should read the note on the charge time masterwork before we talk about any of this stuff, because it actually explains what the charge time stat does. So you said a fusion rifle's damage is determined by its charge time stat, which is similar to how most other weapons' damage is determined by the rate of fire stat. Masterworks can only increase weapon stats for performance reasons. It's not possible to change out charge time maps onto damage without big changes. Blah, 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 blah. Right? We'll talk about the masterwork later. So you were telling me that the charge time stat, when you vary that stat bar itself that you see in the game, that you can see green or red when you're comparing perks and stuff like that, if you vary that, no matter what you do to it, it's going to change the damage fundamentally that the gun is, that the fusion rifle is going to do.
Yeah, exactly. And just to speak to a new aspect of the charge time stat, which wasn't the case before, but the charge time stat will now also determine the bolts per burst. So this is why I had to convert liquid coils and accelerated coils and the charge time mod, because if we let you increase the charge time stat by 2 steps, you'd be firing a different number of bolts, and that feels super janky when you're used to it firing like 7 and suddenly it's firing 9 or whatever.
So to clarify, you cannot do that in
the
game.
You cannot do that.
Like
that.
Okay.
Unless there's some like plus or minus charge time thing that I'm not aware of, but I'm pretty sure we got all of them.
We'll find one. Don't worry about that. We can all find one. Telesto, I'm sure, is going to do it somehow.
Oh my god.
Did Telesto get is Telesto, how does it fall into this?
It's still firing 7. Let me just check my notes.
Oh, that's a shame. Imagine Telesto firing 9.
That would be beautiful and terrifying right there.
Well, it's kind of like a precision with liquid coils, right, for its charge time. So it was more likely to end up in the high impact firing 5 bolts. But yeah, it's still firing 7.
We'll see. We'll see how long it fires 7 for. sure after it comes out. All right, so going back then to what we're talking about. The charge time stat is no longer, and we've actually mentioned this on the show before, but there's like stat changes and then there's scalers, right? And they're two different things.
Yeah.
So you are now applying scalers to the charge time. So backup plan is a 0.85 scaler, which decreases the charge time, or sorry, it's a 0.7 scaler, which decreases the charge time. And then you are also scaling damage by 0.8. Yeah. So functionally it does a similar thing. It makes the charge time faster and it reduces the damage, but it no longer affects the actual stat itself. So you will not see it reflected any longer in the actual stat bars and things like that.
Right.
And then liquid coils and accelerated coils got a rework for a similar reason. They both scale charge time and damage instead of modifying the charge time stat. The final effect is much the same as before, but they are now more robust, but they won't visibly change the stat, as you said. So what are the scalers for liquid coils and accelerated coils?
So, liquid coils, I'm actually just doing an addition here. It's a plus 0.04 seconds charge time and plus 2% damage. And accelerated coils is the opposite, minus 0.04 seconds charge time, minus 2% damage.
Okay, so I'm gonna run some quick maths again here. So it is, okay, that's pretty nice. So liquid coils is going to definitely hurt the charge time on a high impact, but it will allow you to 3-bolt kill slightly higher resiliences
yep.
than zero, which is pretty neat. So might have to stick with that. So a lot of risk with that super slow charge time, but that's a pretty good bit of reward right there, in my opinion. Very interesting. It's great to have those numbers. So you said that accelerated coils, or not accelerated coils, you said that the Adept or the charge time masterwork, you think it now more rarely reduces or increases the bolts to kill? Yeah, that's a lot of stuff. Yep. So you're saying it's now okay because it's not going to increase the bolts to kill in that many situations.
Well, we'll see what players think of it, but like from testing in game and from, you know, running the numbers a bit, it's going to, like, because we increased the damage of most of the subfamilies, we'll find that it decreases or increases bolts to kill more rarely. We'll see, though. Like, it may be that everyone still hates it, at which point maybe we just take it out, or maybe we find some other way to address it.
That seems like a fair thing. So conversely, if you change impact, does that, like, if you were to change the impact stat, would that force the charge time to change? Are they linked in such a way, or is impact entirely dependent on charge time?
So the impact stat, like the stat bar, is basically just a courtesy to players to, so they can identify how this compares roughly with other weapons. The damage per bullet for all weapons is just determined by the rate of fire or the charge time or the draw time.
When you guys are changing damage per bullet for guns, are you having to like manipulate a sliding scale basically of like, at this rate of fire, it will do this much damage without changing the damages on the higher end or the lower end of that too? Is that how you guys are doing that?
Yeah, we have big tables, and so we'll go into the rate of fire table for a weapon, and we'll say this rate of fire corresponds to this subfamily, and we'll just change the damage for that.
Okay, all right, cool. And then I guess would be the Adept charge time mod. You said it felt pointless. Now it's pretty great. So now it just scales charge time directly, and it does not adjust the damage. So you just get a faster charge time, but no negation to your damage or no decrease in your damage.
Yeah, exactly.
That has become a pretty good mod. Man.
That's a fantastic mod now, yeah.
I'm like excited across the board about these fusion rifle changes.
Nice.
Really, really liking them.
Also just really thrilled that the stat order is fixed. That's like one of those things that, you know, probably players can go their whole lives as guardians, never noticing. But once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah, this was a pet peeve of one of the other weapon designers, Brandon, and he just like decided to sneak that fix in.
Thank you, Brandon.
Yeah, well worth it.
Thank you, Brandon. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, we've kind of on to the exotic section now. Everybody's favorite exotic grenade launcher, the Prospector. Right. No, we got Anarchy in here. It's been dominant for years, even if you ignore the season with the grenade launcher artifact mods, of course. And it's basically near mandatory for certain raid bosses combined with double slug shotguns. And it excels as a solo weapon and for ad clears. It's basically just great all around. You could do literally everything that you want with it. So you guys, everybody knew, I think, that this nerf was coming. I think people would have been more surprised if nothing had happened to it. You are reducing the total reserve and magazine ammunition by 10 from 26 to 16, and you are reducing the damage by 30% versus bosses only, and you qualified champions are not bosses. So how did you guys go about making the decision that you were going to nerf everybody's favorite heavy weapon for PvE content?
Well, we didn't do it lightly, and it took us a while to decide to do it. Like, we could have done it at any point over the last year, and it would have been just as justified, right? But it really came down to what the fantasy of the weapon was and which roles we felt like it was interesting for it to fill. Like, boss damage, it's not an interesting weapon in that role, right? Like, there are tons of weapons that do boss damage. And so Anarchy being part of a formula that just dominates that just didn't feel right when it's got these other roles that it can fill in a really interesting way. And yeah, we find, like, it's great that there are weapons that you want to use in hard solo content, so it's Anarchy and Witherhorde, and maybe we'll see a spike in Witherhorde usage with this, we'll see. And, you know, the original purpose of it was to lay these traps for, like, killing ads, rushing through choke points and that sort of thing, so trying to push it more into those kinds of roles and stop eating all other heavy weapons lunch for boss damage.
Well, that makes sense. I feel like the general consensus has been the nerf wasn't as bad as we expected. And I think anytime you're able to do that, it comes off pretty well. I know a lot of people who like solo grandmasters and stuff are like really, really scared that they were going to lose all of their ability to do that. But the reserve amount that it had was insane to begin with. And the fact that you are basically leaving it alone for champions, I think you guys struck a happy medium. Now I'm going to have to defer to my Discord when they tell me that I don't know shit about grandmasters because I don't, but you know, I'll defer to them. But to me, it seems based on, again, let's pull the salt mine that is Reddit. Reddit didn't seem to be flipping out about it. I think that's always a good sign.
Yeah, I feel like it was a case where having a really targeted change was the right call. Like, it didn't need a blanket nerf. There are plenty of situations where it was fine. And we just wanted to address this one thing, and we didn't need to tank it everywhere.
Well, I think mission accomplished on that note. Xenophage, also getting a touch here. So you point out, as I think many of us know, that it was already pretty good. Did not need to benefit from the global machine gun buff. So it is benefiting from the damage per bullet buff to machine guns, but now has a slower rate of fire to compensate. And so as we have now learned, rate of fire correlates directly to damage. So I'm not going to lie, I'm a little confused about how this all plays out. I talked to myself in a circle there, and I don't know where I am anymore. Can you clarify what's going on
here? Yeah, I can sure try. So this was a change which was sort of complicated to think through. It was like, I'm not giving Xenophage a 20% damage buff. The idea of that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it also didn't feel right to bring everything else up and leave it completely alone. One of the things we really liked about Xenophage was it's really punchy to use. Like, every shot that you do is really impactful. And so we really wanted to push harder on that roll. And so it hits even harder now, and it fires a bit more slowly. I feel like this is overall a buff in certain circumstances. Like, I think it's going to be kind of better for clearing up yellow bars, maybe champions and that sort of thing. It won't be as good for boss damage with the short damage phases. It'll be much better for boss damage with long damage phases because it'll take longer to empty its reserves. The total damage per reserves is a lot higher.
So it's basically a sniper now at 90 RPM and with how much damage it does.
Yeah.
Like, it's basically like a heavy sniper. I mean, it's not Whisper or Darcy, which, you know, have their own things, but it's kind of like a heavy sniper now.
Yeah. Yeah, this did not increase its damage against players, by the way. I should have probably called that out in the TWAB.
Oh, so shame.
You can't use it to one shot where you previously couldn't.
Well, the Gambit Sweats will be very disappointed with that.
They can just use eyes.
And then everyone's favorite primary grenade launcher, Fighting Lion. So it's always been fun, but not dominant in PvE. So you weren't really worried about the impact infinite ammo would have there. However, enabling fast, unlimited grenade spamming was too much for PvP based on internal playtest. So we address that specific case without significantly impacting its feel in PvE. So Fighting Lion reserve ammo is obviously now infinite. It receives the same changes as other breach grenade launchers. So that means that it has lost 20 to its blast radius, or its splash damage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Reduce the base reload stat to zero, so it reloads very, very slowly. But now it increases its reload speed to its previous level when you damage multiple enemies with one grenade. That is mostly for PvE.
You're not really going to do that. Yeah, it's super rare for that to happen in PvP.
And then you point out that you really shouldn't be reloading it manually anyways, because the whole point of it is that you damage an enemy, swap to your other weapon, clean them up, and then that's what reloads Fighting Lion anyways.
Yeah, that was a bit cheeky on my part. Like, that's what the exotic perk says. Obviously, people reload it, but... And also, like, to speak a bit to this change, I'm not actually sure that Fighting Lion needed this, but there's no way that you go into a meta where everyone's starting to complain about grenade launchers and say, oh, hey, we're making this infinite ammo one. Like, I don't think that'd fly. But I do think we'll see how this plays, and we'll end up adjusting Fighting Lion, and I don't think we're going to have to further nerf it. Like, it's much more likely that we'd pull back on some of these.
So I have a question here, because I feel like this is going to be the real salt. Warlocks and Titans are going to be really upset with Hunters because Hunters can instantly reload Fighting Lion even without actually, you know, perhaps deserving it. But I mean, that's always the salt, is that Hunters can dodge and do cool things with their dodge all the time.
Well, I mean, you saw the barricade, like the rally barricade changes, right? Like Titans will have a way of making that reload a lot faster.
True.
It's also worth noting that the Catalyst gives you like plus 27 reload speed. So while that number zero is pretty scary, that's not actually what it'll be for most people. Yeah, still. And I guess Warlocks have transversive steps, right? Like you fire it, you run around in a circle, fire it again.
It's not as easy as it is for Hunters, but there are ways for other classes to make it done. But that's kind of the way it is for all things, right? Hunters just have it just a little bit better than everyone.
Yep.
Okay, we're all Hunters here, so at least Kutch and I are Hunters here. I don't know what your main is.
Titan main.
Well, there you go. That's not too bad.
Yeah,
could have said Warlock.
I do have all three characters at the level cap, but I play a lot more Titan.
There you go. All right, cool. Vex Mythic Class. You said you were cautious about this one at launch because we all remember how it launched in D1. What an absolute nightmare that was. You said shipping a dominant weapon with incredibly low ownership would break PvP, which is exactly what it did. So you aimed for balance, but erring on the side of not letting it ship too strong, which you hit that mark. It fell, well, you hit the not letting it ship too strong mark, maybe not the balanced mark. Yeah. Ownership is much higher now, and you want it to be strong enough to be a desirable reward from Vault of Glass. So you increase the PvE damage bonus by 40%, which is a substantial increase. You increase the range stat to be near best in class for high impact auto rifles.
It's worth noting on the PvE damage bonus that the damage bonus is increased by 40%. The damage hasn't increased by 40%. Was getting a PvE damage bonus on top of its base damage, and that is increased by 40. I don't have the exact numbers to hand, but it's not as gigantic as it sounds.
So that would be a good clarification to probably add in the swap, because it sounded like, so damage bonus is very different from PvE damage.
Yeah.
Which is just the flat ML. And then certain guns get a bonus when they go into PvP so they can be tuned, or PvE so they can be tuned a little bit separately.
Right.
Okay, interesting. Well, it still is more damage, which nobody's going to complain about. The stability stat has been increased. The catalyst is reworked to grant stability and damage after a kill. The rate of fire has been increased from 360 to 390. You reduced the linear fusion rifle mode charge time from 820 to 533, which is the same as a standard linear fusion, and it no longer loses overcharge stacks on slow, except when you are in the linear fusion rifle mode. That sounds like a lot of buffs right there. I gotta ask, is the rate of fire increasing up to 390? Does that mean that the damage in PvP per shot when it's in auto rifle mode is going down, or is it maintaining its high impact archetype damage?
It's maintaining its high-impact archetype damage.
Okay.
So it's flat out a buff, right? But the flip side of that is that it doesn't change the TTK all that much. And just to give a little bit of history on this specific one, I was worried about a repeat of Destiny 1, and I didn't want a weapon with 1% ownership to be the strongest primary weapon in the game, right? Like, imagine PvP in that state. So the amazing designer who worked on this and came up with the cool idea for the linear fusion rifle mode, I just wouldn't let him ship it too strong. And so Vault of Glass came out, and he was watching all of the YouTube reviews for like 2 months. And I said, okay, you can buff it in season 15. And so he might have gone just a little bit overboard, but we'll see. It's certainly going to be super fun to use now.
Well, you know, it had its time in the shade, and now potentially it will have its time in the sun.
Yeah. I would much rather it have its time in the sun when more people can have it.
Merciless, you had to touch us anyway because of fusion rifle changes. We figured if you were in there, you might as well make a buff we'd been thinking about. You updated the perk to account for fewer shots per burst because this one is obviously I think it's above a high impact a little bit. But so now it's in the 5 bolts per burst archetype, correct? Confirmed?
Confirmed.
And you have reduced the damage penalty for the increasing charge rate by 40%. So is that a scaler on damage that comes, or are you actually, is its perk changing charge time, the stat, or its perk is applying a scalar to charge time.
Its perk is applying a scalar. Yeah, just to touch on the first point about its charge time, it is the slowest charging special ammo fusion rifle in the game. It's now at 1.04 seconds charge time.
So it's a glacioclasm with liquid coils.
Correct.
Attached to it.
Yeah.
Okay. And then so now as it speeds up its charge time, the damage is still going to decrease, but not as much as it was decreasing previously.
Yep.
Okay. Cool. Well, I mean, that's good. It's good. Merciless. I see some people who swear by Merciless and even in PvP even, which is really interesting to me.
It's a giant buff in PvE. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out in the season of the poop.
I remember when Merciless first dropped in PvE, it was my go-to for a while for taking down any big bosses that came up. That gun melted. So I'm
took it through the Leviathan many a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Jotun. Did I get that right?
Yep.
Is that how we say it?
That's the correct internal terminology.
Jotun it is then. Jotun it is. Because of how charge time stat works with fusion rifle changes, we made a small change to avoid breaking this weapon and playtesting and made almost no difference. But if I didn't mention it, someone would notice. You've reduced the charge time from 0.82 to 0.78. And you have slightly reduced the damage per shot, but functionally it's still going to kill people the exact same way it killed people before. It's just going to charge ever so slightly faster.
Yep.
Sure, there's going to be some salt about that one
well,
at some point. Though.
So,
yeah, we'll see.
The thing that I think that people might notice here is that Jotun was able to one-shot with the burn certain supers, just depending on their damage reduction. It sounds like that may happen less often now.
Yeah, I think that's likely to be the case. Like, it would only barely kill supers as it was. And so it's probably just not going to be able to kill certain supers now.
Right. So gunslingers for sure going to die. But pretty much everyone else probably going to walk away with a sliver of health.
I'm telling them there's a chance.
Yeah. All right. There's a chance.
And then, man, my boy Bastion. I had multiple anime profile pictures tag me, who don't even follow me, tag me on Twitter just to say Bastion nerf LOL. Today, actually, which was interesting, because they don't realize that I've evolved past Bastion and I'm now a Le Monarch man. So it's too late for them. I've already moved on. I knew that. I preemptively figured it was only a matter of time with the shotgun nerfs before Bastion really got hit, with a bit of the hammer. So it's definitely seen an increase in usage in PvP. It actually got to the point where right after the nerf, I was like, man, this thing's. It's always been strong. Now it's really strong. But it was also super low usage in PvE, so they're buffing it there. So you've reduced the damage by 15%. Can now not quite kill a guardian with just one of the three bursts it shoots, right? So it has a burst, and there's like a pellet spread in each burst. There's seven pellets per shot, and there's like a delay in between each one. So now it used to be that if you hit them with all of the pellets in the first of those three, you could kill them. Now you can't quite do that. It's taking him down. It's going to take some pellets from that second one, which actually increases the time to kill of Bastion because now you have to wait for that second burst. And then you increase the spread angle by 10%. But then you increase the PvE damage by 25%. So overall, a 10% increase in PvE. And that is the actual PvE damage. That's not the PvE damage bonus.
Correct, yeah. And actually, my math is wrong there. It's more like a 6.25% like when you multiply those things together at 6.25%.
Well, still, in PvE, the spread angle matters a lot less than it matters in PvP.
Yeah.
So do you have the new number of what... I'm assuming that it does something the same way that... You know, I think probably now shotguns do this too. Do shotguns do it and Bastion does it where you take the total damage and then it gets divided up by the number of pellets?
Yep.
Oh. Do you have the total damage numbers for Bastion?
I don't have the total damage to hand, but I did just jump into a test map and check the damage per pellet, and it'll display as 26 or 27, so it's somewhere in between.
Do you have the total damage per spread for shotguns on hand. I don't know why you would have that. I didn't even know that that was a thing. So I don't know how anybody could have asked for it, but that would solve a lot of problems with shotgun testing. I was always wondering why half of them showed up as one number and half of them showed up as another number within a spread. And I kind of just averaged it out in my damage calculations to being like a 0.5, but.
Yeah, I happen to have like a whole bunch of weapon tables open all the time. So I do have the shotgun one. And like you could calculate this yourself, but let's see, aggressive shotguns, 267. And then rapid fires, 200. And the others are in between.
Gotta leave some puzzles for us to figure out on our own, but I know the Discord's gonna be quite pleased with that one. So yeah, Bastion, well, you had to throw a bone to the anime profile pictures at some point in time. And they've been clamoring for a Bastion nerf for quite some time, and they finally got it.
It's another one of those weapons that just wasn't that high usage. Like, it definitely spiked a little bit, but it wasn't worryingly high. But it is kind of unpleasant to play against in the hands of a skilled player, so.
Just kind of doing some quick math there. It sounds like it will still take supers down.
A full three round burst will still take supers down, I believe. Yeah.
All right.
It's gonna be a lot harder to do that. It's pretty hard to hit all shots from against the super, especially with how mobile some of the roaming supers are. Yeah. Like, as someone who has used Bastion a good bit, like, you're not always guaranteed. There's a significant delay between each one of those bursts as it comes out.
Yeah.
So you have to be pretty close in already. It's like, it's really a 15 meter or less gun. And if you're 15 meters or less from a Striker Titan or a Arc Strider or a Spectral Blades, like, you might not be alive long enough to get that third burst.
Yep.
I'm just saying there's a chance, man.
Well, there's definitely no chance that if three people happen to line up, you'll be able to kill them all, which used to happen.
Yeah. It doesn't surprise me the usage has climbed a bit. We even noticed that looking through our numbers. We were like, oh man, like, Bastion is is rocketing up the charts and almost seeming to gain momentum as the season has progressed.
Second most popular fusion rifle after Jotun. So all up, Bastion is 17% usage of all fusion rifles.
I'm surprised that Jotun is the most popular fusion rifle. Is if you remove exotics as the most popular glacioclasm.
Yes.
And then probably plug one, and then probably Exile's Curse. If I had to take a gander.
Null Composure actually would be the next one.
Really?
Yeah.
I am very surprised that Null Composure is so high up there. Is that that's just in PvP?
Yeah, just all Crucible, but yeah, just PvP.
Wow. I wonder if that holds true in Trials. You don't have to look that up because it's going to take a lot of time.
But yeah.
I would be very surprised if. I wonder if it's just people getting it and then they're like, oh, I'll give it a shot. And then they take it into Crucible.
Well, maybe they really like the red ornament and you have to get a bunch of kills in PvP with it to do that, right?
So I think the thing to do now is to move on from fusion rifles. They have predictably taken up a large chunk of the show, which is what I figured was going to happen, because that truly, truly a massive change to the way the game works.